Translation and Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is the dialogue given by Prahlad Maharaj. He's speaking these two verses. Material opulence is so bewildering that it makes a learned, self-controlled man forget the search for the goal of self-realization. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana, the Lord of the universe, can see everything by His will. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Purport. The words in this verse, Kovi chaste gatimatmano yata, indicate that when one is puffed up by the false prestige of possessing material opulence, he certainly neglects the goal of self-realization. This is the position of the modern world. Because of the so-called scientific improvements in material opulence, people have entirely given up the path of self-realization. Practically no one is interested in God, one's relationship with God, or how one should act. Modern men have altogether forgotten such questions because they are mad for material possessions. If this kind of civilization continues, the time will soon come when the Supreme Personality of Godhead will take away all the material opulences. Then people will come to their senses. Om Anjanatimarandasya Gananjana Shilakai Chakshukurandhitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. This verse, Prahlad Maharaj says, Vichaste gatimatmano yata. Vichaste gatimatmano yata. The search for liberation is lost. Atmana, atmatattva jnana. The same word is there in Bhagavad Gita, chetasa. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya parita chetasa. The same concept is there. Krishna speaks to Arjuna in Gita. The problem with material opulence and sense gratification, bhogaishvarya prasaktanam, for one who is prasakta, for one who is attached, asakti, for one who is attached to sense enjoyment, bhoga, sense gratification, one who is attached to enjoying the body, and he's attached to a position of opulence, aishvarya, respect, reverence, majesty, aishvarya, such a person, he becomes taya parita chetasa. He becomes bewildered by such things. And when one is bewildered by sense gratification, material opulence, then his determination for devotional service cannot take place. He cannot take up spiritual life. If one is too attached to sense gratification, it is impossible. Or if one is too detached, sometimes the commentators, they explain there's two problems facing a conditioned soul, attachment and detachment. If you're too attached to sense gratification, you can't give it up. You remain forever bewildered. Taya parita chetasa. The Atma is chetasa. The Atma is totally bewildered. You can't give it up. You're too attached to sense gratification. So one is too attached to it, he can never give it up, and he can never take up bhakti, spiritual life. So devotion is not for those that are too attached or those that are too detached. If someone is a great renunciate, a great tyagi, virakti, renunciate, he's performs the most difficult austerities, all the vratas, tapasyas, chandrayana vrata, ekadasi vrata, chaturmasya vrata, all the different vratas that he performs, he becomes so detached, so austere, such a great yogi, tapasvi, virakti, vairagi. But he cannot take up devotional service either. Why? Because his heart becomes very hard. His heart becomes like steel. I am a great yogi. The steel frame around his heart is made of ahankara. Ahankara is like molten steel, like molten steel. And we pour it over our hearts. The more austerities the yogi performs, the more tapasya he performs, the more he covers his heart with ahankara. With a steel covering, with a molten lead of ahankara covers his heart. So the heart becomes so hard that the ray of bhakti, the rays, the sweet and soft rays of devotion which emanate from the lotus feet of the devotees and from the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, they cannot penetrate the hard-hearted man, the hard-hearted yogi. So therefore it says if one is too attached to sense gratification, he can't give it up. Or one who is too detached. So Prabhupada explains in the purport on Prahlad Maharaj's comments that material opulence bewilders the soul, daya parte chetasaha, and makes it difficult for him to take up self-realization. Why is it? For the same problem that the yogi has difficulty taking up self-realization. Because material opulence infects one with false prestige, with pride. And throughout the Bhagavatam, we see this connection between opulence, position, power, and pride. And then we see the subsequent results of false prestige and false pride. What follows that pride? A fall. Because we say pride precedes a fall. So following pride comes a fall. You must fall from your position. The Srimad Bhagavatam has so many stories about great kings and great yogis and great jnanis and tapasvis who fell from their positions because of pride. Pride precedes a fall. Daksha, now we're in eighth canto. So we had in the fourth canto Daksha. Daksha was appointed as a great Prajapati, the chief of the Prajapatis, but he became very proud of his position. I'm the great Prajapati. I'm the progenitor of the whole universe. And then this pride put him in such a dangerous position that he insulted and made a great Vaishnava. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. Mahadev, the greatest of all the demigods. What is his greatness? What is the greatness of Mahadev? Bhakti. His greatness is his devotion. He is the greatest devotee. Mahadev, Shambhu, Shankarshan, Shiva. And Daksha, he thought, who is this Shiva? He's covered with ashes. He's an insignificant person. He has no money. He has no wealth. He doesn't even have a house. He lives under the bilba tree. And his wife is always crying for bangles and saris. And he's busy chanting, Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Hari Ram. Sounds familiar, right? ISKCON Grihastha, your wife. So he's crying for gold and bangles, and you're busy. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oh, I will buy you a new sari and some gold bangles as soon as I finish my rounds. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Like Haridas, right? So Haridas Thakur, when the prostitute came proposing, he said, no, I'm busy. I will fulfill your desire. So husbands can also use the same idea. Wife comes asking for different things. Oh, no, let me finish my rounds. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So Lord Shiva, he was always chanting, Hey Ram, Hey Ram, Hey Ram, Hey Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. He had no time for his wife's petitions for opulence. In fact, the story is there, Prabhupada tells of Lord Shiva once. His wife was pulling on him too much. Please, can't we have a bigger tree? This tree, at least we can have a bigger tree. Maybe if we get even a house, we could have, or a palace. So Lord Shiva said, all right, you want a palace? You won't be happy with a palace, but anyway, I'll give you a palace. He snapped his fingers and a huge palace was there. And of course, you have to have your Griha privation. Invite all the demigods for the opening of the palace. So he invited Chandra, Indra, Surya, all the demigods and all their wives, Arundhati and Sachi, and everyone was invited to the opening of his housewarming party. And Parvati was so happy. Oh, finally we have a beautiful palace, a golden palace with columns made of coral, and the walls are made of crystal, and we have so many beautiful furnitures. And so they fed everyone, they had the Griha Pravesha, they fed all the devatas, and everyone was satisfied. And then one of the demigods, one of the rishis approached Lord Shiva and said, okay, now your function is almost complete. Now please, you have to give us some daan, give us some charity, then we will go and give you blessings. You can live happily in your palace with your wife, Parvati. And Shiva said, oh, wow, I forgot. I forgot to go to the state bank and get a stack of 5 rupee notes. I forgot to go to the state bank and get my stack of rupee notes so I could give out to all the sadhus and rishis after the bandara. Oh, I forgot. I don't have anything. Oh, anyway, you just take this palace. You take this palace as your don and let me go back to my bilba tree. So then he left that house, took his wife by the hand, and they went back to the bale tree, the bilba tree. So this story is there. So this, obviously this is a tangential point, but the point is that Daksha became proud of his position. He offended this great devotee, Mahadev. And then there's Hai Hai. Hai Hai was our temple president years ago in Vrindavan, years ago, Hai Hai. So there's a great king named Hai Hai, and he thought, oh, let me steal this cow of Jamadagni. I should steal this Kamadhenu cow of Jamadagni, and I'll have this so much wealth. But Jamadagni has one son who didn't want his father's cow to be stolen. So when this Hai Hai became so proud, I can do anything. I'm the king. What is this Jamadagni? I'll just take his cow. He became very proud, full of false prestige, and of course he fell, because the son of Jamadagni is Parasaram. And Parasaram took his chopper and said, hey, Mala, you don't steal my father's cow. And he lost his head. This is what happens. Sometimes they say that power, that it goes to his head. We have an expression like that. He has become so proud, his false pride, it's gone to his head. And generally see that people become very proud, they lose their head. Their head is cut off. They become proud of their wealth, become proud of their position, just like our Shatadandva. Shatadandva, he had the Shalantaka jewel for a few moments in his hand. He had this powerful jewel that could produce so much gold, he would become the ruler of the whole world. This Shatadandva, because he stole this jewel, you know, he stole it from Satyajit. You have to know the whole story. So Shatadandva, she keeps saying, Satyajit, there's a voice in the back, Satyajit. But that's the beginning of the story. Shatadandva stole the jewel after it being instigated by Krita Varma and Akrura. Anyway, Shatadandva had it for a few moments, and he became very proud. Then Krishna knocked his head off with a backhanded slap. So in this way, we have so many stories in Bhagavatam. Narakasura, he was a big asura, very powerful. Narakasura, he was the greatest king of the subterranean planets, Naraka. Naraka means hell. He was the king of all the planets, Narakasura. He thought, who is this Aditi? Who is this Aditi? The queen of the demigods, the mother of all the demigods. I will steal her earrings. It's like sometimes you go in the public place in Delhi and some dacoit steals a lady's earrings. Steals her earrings or steals her necklace. It's a very common thing in India. So Narakasura, he became so puffed up and he was killed. Then there's King Vena. King Vena was thinking, why are these Brahmins? Why should they worship Vishnu? I am the king. I am Naradeva. I am everything. I'm not only the Nara, but I am the king, I am the god, I am everything. Forget about this Vishnu. Everyone just worship me. Don't worship anyone. I am the king. I am Vena. He became so proud. And the Brahmins, they looked at him and they said, what? So they thought over what he said. And while thinking over what he said, they completely rejected his foolish proposal that he was a king. And they just chanted a simple mantra, Sometimes you're pondering over something, you're thinking of something, you're contemplating something, you may say, If you write that in English, it's H-M-M-M. But the mantra that they chanted, they simply chanted one bija mantra to annihilate this Venu. What was that mantra? H-U-M. So he was saying, I am the king, I am so powerful. And they said, oh really? We will chant one mantra and finish you. Because we have Brahman Tejas. When you're so proud of your kingly power, finish. And then there was another great king, Nahusha, he temporarily sat on the throne of Indra, and he thought, I am the Mahendra, I am the great Indra, I am the great king. So one day, he ordered some brahmanas. He said, you brahmanas, you carry me on a palanquin. You carry me on a palanquin for an illicit meeting with Indra's wife, Sachi. Because he had also captured his wife, because Indra took off so fast, he didn't even care about his wife. So when Nahusha took over the heavenly planets, he also imprisoned Zachi, the wife of Indra. So Nahusha, he was so proud, he thought, I can enjoy the chaste wife of Indra, Zachi. So he ordered the brahmanas, put me on a palanquin, take me over there. So then he went over there, and they put him on the palanquin, and they dumped him off the palanquin and killed him. The brahmanas killed him. They didn't entertain his foolish proposal to violate the chastity of the saintly wife of Indra, Zachi. And throughout the Bhagavatam, then we see pride in the Brahminical class. A little boy named Sringi, right? Shamakrishi's son, what was it? Shamakrishi? He had a son named Sringi. And Sringi was so incensed and so angry over the fact that this King Parikshit had draped his father with a sarp mala for the garland, for the garland of a snake. He just cursed him. And with that cursing, because of that pride, he became proud of his power and he cursed the innocent King Parikshit. Then the whole social order was disrupted. So the pride of Sringi brought down or toppled. It toppled the whole Varnashram system. The whole social order was toppled due to this false pride. Pride precedes the fall. He became proud of his Brahminical power as a young boy. And he wrongly exercised it against the innocent King Parikshit. And as a result, the whole social order fell down because he was a Brahmin. And when the Brahmins misused their power, then everything was lost because the Brahmins are head of society. So this is the beginning of Kali Yuga, and the whole crazy, horrible age we live in began with this false pride of Sringi. So this is, of course, a great stumbling block on the path of self-realization, pride. And Prahlada Maharaji warns us that if pride enters into our heart, it will keep us from attaining the fruits of self-realization. It will prevent one from entering the path of self-realization. And if one is on the path of self-realization and he becomes proud of his position, I'm a big sannyasi, I'm a big author, I'm a big guru, I'm a big rich man. If we're proud of our opulence, because opulence means different things. Sanaishvarya porna. Aishvarya samagrasya, viryasya, nishashashriya. What is opulence? What is Aishvarya? Krishna, he possesses unlimited opulences. One of them is renunciation. Oh, I'm a big sannyasi, I'm so renounced. Or wealth, you have money, oh, now I have so much money, I don't have to listen to anyone. I remember hearing one godbrother, he told me one time, he said, Maharaj, I've realized one thing about this society. I've realized one thing, that if you are humble and submissive and simply dedicated to your service, or if you're austere, an austere brahmachari, austere grihastha, whatever, no one will listen to you. No one will listen to you. But if you go out in the world and make a lot of money, if you make a lot of money, then everybody will listen to you. So this one grihastha godbrother, he told me, yes, I realize you make a lot of money, everybody will listen to you in this society. But we can see that there's a danger in this, because when you get this money, you may become proud. So these opulences, to have money, to have renunciation, to have learning, oh, I'm a great scholar, I know so much. I've learned so much Sanskrit, so much Bengali, so many verses. You know what I've realized? Now that I have knowledge, once you have knowledge, then you can get vijnana. Because without any knowledge, there can't be any vijnana. So I've studied so much Sanskrit, and I'm such a learned man, right? This is also one of Krishna's opulences. He's the most learned person, the most wise person. So now, you know what I've realized? I've realized that I know more than Prabhupada. I know more than Prabhupada. Remember, there was one godbrother named Nittai. I don't know if you know history, but, you know, ISKCON history. But there have been different famous scholars amongst my godbrothers that have come and gone. They had so much knowledge, then they had a realization one day, I know more than Prabhupada. I know more than he does. In fact, I can correct Prabhupada. And I can correct his books, I can correct his Sanskrit. Oh look, he made a mistake here, and he made a mistake here. And then what happened to that person? Pride precedes a fall. Then they fall from Guru's grace. Then they fall from the mercy of Prabhupada. And they become asara. They become useless. Asara. I mean, useless son. So this is a great danger of any of these opulences. So, bhogaishvarya prasaktanam tayaparita chejasam. Tayaparita chejasam. One becomes bewildered and thinks, oh, I'm so learned. I know more than my guru. I'm so wealthy I can dictate the spiritual direction of society. I'm so renowned so everyone should listen to me. As soon as one becomes proud of any of these opulences, he loses everything. For example, there's one brahmachari in a temple. He does Nirjali Kadasi. Hey, Baba, I do Nirjali Kadasi, you know? I'm such a great tapasvi. Oh, really? Do you know? I just read in the Shastras, Mr. Brahmachari, that if you become proud of your austerity, you lose all the benefit and lose all the fruits of your austerity. So you better try again 2 weeks from now, because your pride and your tapasya has cancelled and destroyed all the results. Oh, Prabhu, I chant 64 rounds a day. I do prikama, so many prikamas. As soon as you're proud of your accomplishment, or as soon as you're proud of any kind of opulence you have, you fall. You lose it. It leaves you. It goes away from you. And then, there's no self-realization. These points are there in this verse. Actually, what was intriguing to me, I was meditating on the whole Leela of Vamana and Bali Maharaj, and there's two conceptions that are a little more thought-provoking, is that there's these two ideas of Atmanivedanam and Sharanapati. Atmanivedanam and Sharanapati. We hear throughout this story of Bali Maharaj, he is the representative. There's nine forms of devotional service. Sharanam Kirtanam Vishnu Manasayunam Archanam Nandasakim Atmanivedanam. And there are different devotees that exemplify perfection in those different categories. So who shows Atmanivedanam? What devotee shows this quality of Atmanivedanam? It's Bali Maharaj. So we're discussing Bali Maharaj day after day after day. So he exemplifies, or he shows Atmanivedanam, which is the ninth limb, Navavidhi Bhakti. It's the ninth limb of Bhakti. So what is this Atmanivedanam? In Rupa Goswami's discussion of Bhakti, he describes 64 different steps or limbs of Bhakti. And the 49th one is Atmanivedanam. Atmanivedanam he defines as absolute self-dedication. Absolute self-dedication. But as he progresses further in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he comes to number 52, which is Sharanapati. Sharanapati means Sharanagati, Sharanam, Krishna Sharanam Mama. Sharanapati means total self-surrender. So what is the difference between Atmanivedanam and total self-surrender? So in the analysis of Atmanivedanam, Jiva Goswami breaks the word down into two different points. He says, Adhanta. The Atma, the word Atma, we have Atmanivedanam, is Adhanta, means ego. So there's two forms of this Atmanivedanam. One involves ego. Ego means I am, a sense of identity. I am. And the other part is Atma, and then the second part is Mamata. We have Atma, right? Atma Nivedanam. So he says, the Atma part, ego, then Mamata means possession. Means possession or mindness. Mindness or possession. Possessiveness. So these are the two qualities of self-dedication. Atmanivedanam means self-dedication. Because of course Atma means the self, Atma means the body, the mind, the words. All these things can be taken in Atma. So these two divisions of self-dedication means, ego means I identify myself with the body. I am the body. I am the controller. I am powerful. I am the enjoyer. That, of course, is false ego, wrong ego. Then mindness, or the sense of mamata, or possession, means this is my body, my house, my country. So now, Atmanivedanam, when one dedicates the self to God, or self-dedication, absolute self-dedication, then he thinks, I am Krishna Das. Das was me. Jivera Krishna, I am Krishna Das. I am a servant of Krishna, and mind means that the remnants, Jiva Goswami explains, mindness, possession means that the remnants of Krishna belong to me. And that I belong to Krishna, and the Krishna is mine. This is Mamata. Is Adhanta. Adhanta means ego. Adhanta or Atma. And then Mamata or mindness, this is Atma, means that Krishna's prasadam belongs to me. Krishna's remnants belong to me. They're mine. That's my possession. Nothing else. I don't own this body. I don't own this world. And whatever I have, I am mine. Whatever, what whatever I claim to be mine, my body, my words, my intelligence, my house, it is all meant for the service of Krishna. But this is Atmanivedana. So we see that Bali Maharaj, he was described as Atmanivedana. He was dedicated to what? He was dedicated to Brahminical culture. He was dedicated to Brahminical culture because Vamanadeva came to beg charity and he said, yes, I must give you charity. So, Bali Maharaj, he represents Atmanivedana. But Atmanivedana has two categories and there's a distinction we have to understand between Atmanivedana and Sharanapati, self-surrender. Because in Atmanivedana, one may dedicate himself, he may dedicate his body, but there may not be this mood of devotion and subservience. An actual mood of devotion and subservience. So we see that, or we say dependence. Dependence and subordination. In self-surrender, which is number 53, which is called Sharanapati, the devotee, he feels totally dependent on the Lord. And totally subservient and dependent on the Lord. This is self-surrender. I have everything for the Lord. But if we examine Bali Maharaj, he did not have this mood of dependence on the Lord or self-servience. He did not have that. This is Acharya's explained. So he was Atmanivedana. He was dedicated. Yes, I dedicate my kingdom. I dedicate my whole kingdom. I dedicate my head. I dedicate my body. He dedicated that, but he didn't have an attitude in his heart. He didn't have the mentality as, I am Krishna, I am yours. I am your servant. And you are mine. He didn't have this attitude. And this is the difference between King Bali Maharaj and another king named Amrish Maharaj. Amrish Maharaj, he represents Sharanapati. This mood of self-surrender. And that's why here in 8th canto, we learn about this mood of self-dedication. But then as we move to the 9th canto, we learn about Amrish Maharaj. This mood of self-surrender. Where he was totally surrendered to the Lord. And we see that the proof of his, the difference between his mood of self-surrender and self-dedication is a verse that glorifies his very activities. Savaya Mana Krishna Padaravindayor Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunarnavarnane. When we see the activities of Bali Maharaj, yes, Bali Maharaj, he dedicated, he surrendered in a sense, but he dedicated his kingdom and his body. But what was his mood? Was his mood one of subservience and one of total dependence on the Lord? Because that's our real position. Our real position is to be always bowed down. Our real position is always subservience, subordination, dependence. Trinadipisarishana. That's our position. It's defined by Mahaprabhu. What is our eternal position? Down underneath the piece of straw on the ground on the street. Trinadipi. Trinadipi means grass. Trina. Trina means a blade of grass. Trinadipisarishana. So we do that and then we'll experience it. But what happens is when one advances in his austerities and he starts learning more, he becomes a Brahmin sannyasi, then what happens? He gets his hunkar. He gets his false pride. He thinks, I don't bow down anyone. Besides, I read in the Shastras, I'm a sannyasi. It says a sannyasi doesn't have to bow down to anyone. So, I don't have to bow down to anyone. It says that in the Shastras, but the sannyasi, he's in the third order. The sannyasi, there's four orders of sannyas. So the fourth order of sannyas is Paramahamsa. So you're a sannyasi, you don't bow down to anyone. And then you go out to Govardhan, you meet a Paramahamsa, who's in the fourth stage of sannyas. You may be Parivraja. You may be Bahudak, or what was it? Kutichak, Bahudak, or Parivrajak. You may be Parivrajak sannyas, traveling all over the world preaching. But Paramahamsa, he's in this totally renounced position, like the Goswamis in their white beige. They're Paramahamsa sannyasis. So we think, oh, I'm a sannyasi, I don't have to bow down to anyone. Haribol, I don't even pay any attention or ignore everyone. But then when I meet the Paramahamsa sannyasis, I see that they're making offering obeisances to everyone. Ladies, men, grihastas, brahmachari, sannyasis, mlechas, yavanas. I mean, this person was born in India, this Paramahamsa, that was offering obeisances to me. I'm a mlecha yavana. Pashyanti, Nashtik, demon, Asura. And he's born in Bengal, he's probably born in Navadvip Dham, who knows his janam, his purva janam, and his samskaras, and how pure and advanced he must be. He's a Paramahamsa Sannyasi, and he's offering obeisances to me. So this is a great practice that kind of leaves our devotional profile as we advance. It leaves, let's see, our devotional portfolio, is what I meant to say. This quality of offering obeisances and bowing down to one another, personal portfolio, as we add more and more letters to our name, BA, MS, PhD. When we become a devotee with a PhD, MS, you know, I'm a big devotee, advanced devotee, then, Baba, I don't bow down to anybody. So when Vishnu, in the 11th canto, there's one nice purport, Lord Vishnu is instructing Amrish Maharaj. Because we have to cultivate this mood of surrender, humility before one another. But especially, how do we surrender to Krishna? We can't see Krishna, we can't feel Krishna, we can't taste Krishna, we can't smell Krishna, we can't embrace Krishna, we can't hear Krishna's voice, we can't hear Krishna's flute, we can't feel Krishna's presence within our heart, we can't remember Krishna's pastimes within our mind. We can't envision Krishna when we chant our japa. When we chant Gayatri, we can't hear the sweet sound of Krishna's voice mixed in the sound of his flute as he communicates to his loving associates. We can't hear any of these things or have any of these experiences. But when in the Vishnu Dharmottara is quoted in one purport, 11th canto of Bhagavatam, and there Lord Vishnu is directly speaking to Amrish Maharaj, who is the emblem of Sharanapati, self-surrender. And he says, here's how you cultivate surrender, my dear Amrish Maharaj. You should always think of the deity. Always think of Radha Shamsun. Always think that they're, and always desire to touch them, and always desire to hear about them, and always engage in praying to them, and always engage in remembering them. And you should feel when you're walking somewhere that they are walking with you, that Radha Shama Sundar are in front of you and behind you, and they are on the right hand side of you, and on the left hand side, and they are within you, and they are outside of you, and they are in the hearts of others. And you should always remember them when you're sleeping, or when you're eating, or when you're dreaming, or at any time. You should always remember the deity and always surrender to them. This is how you can cultivate surrender. So of course we've heard about the six limbs of surrender, but we can direct those to the deity. That Radha Shama Sundar and Krishna Balaram are maintaining me. And they're guarding me. They're my guardians and maintainers. And they're giving me any ability I have. And they're enabling me to do anything. And they're offering me so many favorable things to develop prema bhakti. Their service at the lotus feet, resonance in their holy dham, association with their intimate devotees. They're giving me so many things. And they're reminding me. Krishna and Balaram sometimes speak to me in my heart. And they say, be careful. Hey, bhakta. Pratikulyasya vibharjana. Pratikulyasya vibharjana. This is pratikul. Don't do what you're doing. This is against devotion. This is against bhakti. Sometimes they speak to me in my heart and they remind me. So Krishna Balaram, everything is coming from them, and everything is coming from Radha Shama Sundar, and I surrender to them and they guide me. And these in Hari Bhakti Vilas, there are nice prayers given about self-surrender. That if a devotee just raises his hand above his head in the mood of Lord Chaitanya, who has always had his hands raised above his head, he says, my dear Lord, oh Radharani, oh Shamsundar, Krishna Balaram, from this day forward, I surrender to you. I have nothing but you. I have nothing in this world but you. I surrender to you. Then that person will become a ward in the kingdom of Krishna. Krishna will take that person under his shelter, his lotus feet, and protect him in all circumstances if we have that mood of surrender. Tadevasmi, na jivami twayamina, itibhigaya devi twam, nayamam charanantika. Just Goswami says the ultimate perfection of surrender is what? We say in the Gita, Sarvadharman Pritajamamekam Sharanam Vraja. Surrender to Krishna, Sharanam, Sharanapati, Krishna Sharanagati. Oh Krishna, Sharanagati Prabhu. Oh Sharanagati Prabhu. I surrender unto you, Krishna. You are my master, you are my lord, my protector, my maintainer, my everything. But this is not the Gaudiya Sharanagati. When you go to Balabhacharya's Thakurji Nachi, they say, Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama. Krishna Sharanam. Krishna Sharanapati. Surrender to Krishna. But our Gaudiya life, we don't want to surrender to Krishna. We want to surrender to Srimati Radha Rani. Very good. This is our line. So in this prayer from Vilap Kusumanjali by Raghunath Das Goswami, he says, Tavevasmi, Tavevasmi, Najivami, Tvayavina. Tavevasmi, I am yours, I am yours. He tells in this Vilap Kusumanjali, I don't care about living in Vrindavan. I know this may sound crazy. I don't care about living in Vrindavan. I don't even care about Krishna. Krishna Sharanam Mama Tikne Koi Bhatne. I don't care about Krishna Sharanam Mama. What do I care about? I care about Radha Sharanam Mama. This is the ultimate surrender of the Gaudiya Vaishnava, to surrender to the mood of Radharani. You may be in whatever particular rasa, Sakya rasa, Matsalya rasa, whatever, but that mood of submission, that mood of dedication, absolute self-surrender that's exemplified in the most perfect way by the Gopis of Vrindavan. So of course, Das Goswami, he's in a particular bhava, Mandri bhava. So he prays, Tavevasmi, I am yours, Najivami Tvayavina. Vigya, please realize this, please understand this, Najivami. I cannot live without you. If you do not accept me and shelter me and guard me and maintain me, I cannot live any longer. I depend on you. I am surrendered unto you. I am subservient to you. This is Radha Sharanagati, Sharanagati. Then he says, please, please take me. Please understand this and take me to your lotus feet. I have no other desire than this. So of course, this is the ultimate perfection of surrender. And we want to someday come to this position by mercy of Guru and Gauranga. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.